Welcome to Synapse, Think Tank of the Air, featuring influencers, creatives, and thought leaders in the Twin Cities. And now, here is our host, Steve Lebeau.
And welcome to Synapse, Think Tank of the Air. I'm your host, Steve Lebeau, and we have three gentlemen today. This is our first all-male program. I hope we won't get any criticism for this. But we have two men that are running organizations that sound a lot alike, and they have kind of a similar purpose in general, too. We have Dario Otero with Youth Lens 360, and to match that up, we have Chad Carruthers from 360 Journalism. So you see what we're doing there? And then wearing the shirt, taking sides, Youth Lens 360, is Devante Lowe, who is a student.
Yeah, how you doing?
Of sorts. So we're here. Well, why don't you start with you, Dario, and tell me how you got to be the head honcho of Youth Lens 360.
Yeah, Youth Lens 360 is really a culmination of many things that I've done in my life. Started out early in visual communications technology as a major in college and undergrad, and went to grad school for special education. And started out working in the high school where I developed a program called the VIP program, working with students with special needs, but in the video production, photography field. And we kind of took that show on the road when we went on and worked with companies and stuff outside of the school. And one thing I noticed was that this entrepreneur spirit really wasn't being tapped in a lot of schools. This school that I was working at was High School for Recording Arts in St. Paul, and they allowed me to be able to be creative. But how many other youth out there weren't getting this type of a program or going to high school and seeing this entrepreneurial lens for themselves? So I stepped outside of the school and I decided to start this company. I've always been an entrepreneur at heart. I've always had a side business. And so one of the things that I wanted to do was say, let me just try this, you know, merge both of the things that I've been doing and create Youth Lens 360, working with the youth. And Youth Lens 360 is a youth marketing company. So we're out there. We're a for-profit company.
He's marketing you with this T-shirt.
Right. He's doing some marketing right now.
Right there in his shirt. And then I like your business cards, too. They're little circles that are kind of like monocles. You can put them up. And all you see is a youth lens.
Yes. And then, I mean, that's by design, of course, because when you work with the youth, they have all these creative ideas. So one of them was, why don't you just make a circle card?
Okay, well, and they're keeping you young, Dario.
Exactly.
And we have Chad Carruthers. And who's keeping you young? And where are you from?
You know, I want to start out by saying that you mentioned monocle, and I've always wanted to have a monocle. I'm really sidetracked now thinking about a monocle and all the cool things I could do with one of those. But yeah, I'm Chad Carruthers. I'm the executive director of 360 Journalism, which in a sentence, 360 is a journalism outreach program for high school students, and we focus on underrepresented populations. We've evolved a lot in the last few years. We've been around for about 20 years here in the Twin Cities, here at St. Thomas, I should say. How did I get to where I am today? I've been at 360 for about 4 years. And like Dario here, it's kind of a culmination of some things, or maybe not a culmination, but at least a combination of a lot of the things I've done in my life. So I have an undergraduate degree in journalism and have done a lot of communication and marketing things through the years. As I was finishing graduate school here at the U, I got involved in the nonprofit sector as a volunteer. And one thing led to another in the nonprofit sector, and here I am at 360 as the executive director, and it's been great. It still is great. A big part of why I got to where I am today in this area is I moved to Minnesota about 17 years ago.
From
California. I grew up in St. Louis and then moved out to California for 8 years.
You just can't make up your mind.
No, but I've been here 17 years.
I only have so many years.
You know, this is a pretty good chunk right here. So, but one thing I noticed, and this was a while back, was that, the people you saw on the street here were a lot different than the people I saw in California and that I grew up with. It was much more diverse in those two other places. And when I got here, I didn't see it. And, you know, I've always been passionate about urban education and some other issues. So to be honest with you, at that point in time, I kind of sought out some diversity. I got involved volunteering at a Somali charter school back then, which was great. I'd never seen a Somali person in my life at that time. And again, when we get to where I am today, there are all sorts of different factors, and that's one of them. So,
Well, and I should say, my daughter went to your program. So that's what got her where she is today.
Oh, wow. We love to hear that.
She's a college graduate. She's actually headed towards Japan. She's going to try to get a job in Tokyo.
Wow, that's very cool.
So that is. Good luck to her.
Anyway, I know. Good luck. Everybody knock on wood.
Yeah.
So, Devante.
Yeah.
Your turn.
Oh, well.
Who are you? Where'd you come from? And why are you wearing that t-shirt?
Well, I'm Devante Lowe. I came from my mother originally, you know.
Back to the source.
Yeah, you know. I guess I'll start out by saying how I got connected with Dario and Youth Lens 360. I got connected with Dario through a good friend of mine. I met him in high school and I've known him a while now. And basically I believe it was a photo shoot or something with photography. And so that's kind of how we got linked in. And then, ever since then, he's kind of just taken me under his wing, and you know, I had that passion to want to learn, so I've just been working with him. I've done a few things with Dario. I did the Minnesota C700 State Project.
What's that?
That is basically, it's a training module for companies on how to interview individuals with disabilities. So how to not ask entrapping questions and stuff like that.
Stupid.
Yeah, stuff like that. Cover their P's and Q's. So.
So what's your business idea?
My business idea for myself is kind of the same vision, working with youth. I want to start a business of my own, working with youth, underprivileged youth, homeless youth, youth who really, you know, haven't had that fair square opportunity, you know, chance at life. So I want to do something to give back to the community and to help others. You know, I feel like my voice is the most powerful gift I have, and it'd be a waste not to use it for the right reasons.
That's true. But what's your revenue model?
Revenue model?
Yeah.
Man, I got to get that one together.
Because I know we're here with the nonprofit.
Yeah.
360 Journalism. And Dario, what are you, a nonprofit or a for-profit?
I'm a for-profit.
Okay.
And one of the things
so
that...
you got that capitalism going
on. Yeah, definitely. And, you know, a lot of people tell me I should be a nonprofit because I work with youth and I'm trying to bring them into a space of entrepreneurship. But I think they need to see me go through the struggle and go through the, you know, the fight to be an entrepreneur. And that a lot of that is staying for a profit.
If Dario can do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And with Devante, you know, it's just introducing him to a lot of different things to see which one caught on. And one of the things that happened with the C700 project was he was able to do voiceover work. Never doing that before, and realizing that his voice was very powerful. He said, I need to design something around this for youth in my community to be able to have this experience. And so that's really... it's not at a stage where he has a revenue model because he's really in a design stage.
Yeah, I'm in a design. I'm trying to figure out really.
That's a good line. I'm in the design stage.
Under construction.
Pre-revenue.
When I first sparked the idea of it, I wanted it to be nonprofit, but I mean, you got to have some type of revenue sometimes to keep yourself afloat, especially like if you want to do things that are going to give back to people, you know, like you got to have some source of income. So,
well, I mean, Synapse is the same thing. A lot of people tell us that we should be a nonprofit. But then I talked to a guy at the Bush Foundation. He goes, there are so many nonprofits in the Twin Cities, Minnesota, that we don't need another one. But you slipped in. You were grandfathered in, Chad. You were not. You joined a nonprofit, so it wasn't up to you whether to start it. But you've got some pretty strong supporters.
We do. And, you know, foremost, we're at the University of St. Thomas. So they not only provide seed money for our budget every year, but also space and all the terrific resources they have at the university, both from a program perspective and what we can offer our students. We're very intentional about them really getting a better understanding of the college experience and process.
And they have a good journalism school
They do have a good journalism school. So we love to use the expertise, not to mention the equipment that is available to us at St. Thomas.
Are you using that microphone?
Yeah, exactly. We do have a lot of longtime terrific supporters. And it's interesting to hear you guys talk about the nonprofit versus the for-profit. And I've never run a for-profit business. I've worked for them. I've never run one. I've run two nonprofits. And I think one thing, a lot of misperception is that a nonprofit can't make a profit, and that's not true. But
they just don't pay taxes.
It can be harder. Yeah, you're right. You're right. But you're also right. There are a ton of nonprofits here in this area, and there is also a lot of terrific philanthropic support. But at the end of the day, what that means is there's a lot of competition for those dollars. So, and I think you guys know this or you'll learn this, that some sort of blend of, if you are a nonprofit, of the actual philanthropic money, but also having steady revenue streams as part of your budget every year is really important.
But then the thing that I like about both of your organizations is the productivity, the hands-on, let's do stuff, let's make stuff. I mean, that's what I like about journalism. I mean, that's where I've spent my career. You're either taking a blank tape and filling it up, or taking a blank page and filling it up, and you're communicating to people. So it's you're manufacturing, you're getting something across. Too much of education, I think, is just sitting in your desk staring at somebody talking at you.
Yeah, I don't think education in the future is going to even be in brick and mortar buildings. There'll be some component of that. But I think the more that we can get these youth outside of the school building into the real world, we'll see a difference in education. I think that's what needs to happen, is just real world learning.
I mean, I know for me, for instance, like when I was a student, well, I'm still a student now, I'm onto the college field, but what really helped me, or what really motivated me to be good in school and to do good, is like just hands on, you know, actually doing stuff and feeling that accomplishment feeling, you know, like you get what you put in out of this. So,
and it makes things practical. I mean, for a lot of my studies, it's like, well, why are we studying this? What are you going to do with it? And so it just becomes kind of an intellectual game. Okay, let's get all these answers right. Let's score well on all the tests.
Exactly.
And then what good does that do? Yeah. They've shown that high IQs don't mean a thing when it comes to the real world. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean you're going to be productive or a leader or anything.
Test really well.
Yeah, I test well.
You can jump through the hoops, basically.
Yes, I can. Hey, let's go take a test.
And you know, I think that the traditional model of education, it works for about 50% of the kids, and there's still a component of that other people need to learn, right? Like, if I'm more of a visual learner or hands-on learner, I do need a component of traditional education at some point, right? But it's just overbearing that's the only way that these kids really have to be able to show how good they are. It's like standardized tests and things like that. And so creating programs like 360 Journalism and Youth Lens 360 for people to have an outlet, or to see, you know, what it's like to go out there and really have an experience that you can apply, like you said, to your real life. And like, you know what you could do with this. And then it may spur something or spark something in you that says, oh, okay, I might have went on a photo shoot, but maybe now I want to go into voiceover work because I had this experience, but it started out with going out and having this other experience. So that led to another one.
Hmm. Yeah, growing up, I always had a sense that, of course, I'm much older than all of you. Probably if you add all your ages, it's about what I am. But I always had the sense that our real life wasn't that real, but if it was on TV, then it was more real. Yeah. It was in the paper. And so you strive to maybe be on TV sometime. And then I got to work at KSTP for a while. I was in their TV newsroom doing radio. And I remember I went to cash my check at the bank, and the cashier said, "Hey, I was on KSTP." And I go, "Yeah, what happened?" "Oh, my garage burned down."
Oh, no.
Great. Hey, you made it reasons. On. You got real.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you're legit now.
Yeah, legit. Now, did you actually do journalism in your career?
Not traditional journalism, no. I did a lot of different business communications, right, work. And, you know, I'll tell you, for me, as I've gone through my career especially, but even when I was still in school, the ability to be able to communicate well and specifically write well and communicate whatever it is that you're trying to say or tell through the written word has always been, first of all, I've always valued the importance of it, but it also fascinates me too, in good writing. And we see it a lot in professional lives, and I'm sure you know some folks as well. Through email, we get to see how everybody writes these days, and it's not always pretty, right? And it's not always correlated to how intelligent a person is, but it really makes a difference no matter what type of work you're doing to be able to communicate effectively. And it does, you know, image is everything, sometimes you hear, but that is part of your image, and to be able to utilize that skill. And that's why at 360, everything we do starts with writing. And then we move on to, you mentioned voice, and we want our kids, first of all, to learn how to tell their own story, and that it matters, and that it's interesting, and that they can tell it. And then we move on to the other areas in media where they start to tell other people's story through both print and TV and radio and so forth.
One thing you learn in doing journalism, or in writing or expressing in general, that it's hard to write if you don't have any ideas.
Yeah.
So you've got to think it through and have that first. And so a lot of times when people say they don't write, it's like, well, is it that you don't write or that you don't think? You know, which one is it?
That's one of the most, for what we do, one of the most gratifying things, selfishly, is that most of our kids sit down and they start with a college essay boot camp with us, and that's exactly what they think is, I don't have anything to say.
Writing their essay to get into college.
Yes, yes. It doubles as a personal essay.
Right.
But, yeah, and almost, you know, every single one of them, the first thought is, I have nothing to say. There's no way I can do this. And it's really magical. It's a boot camp, so it's 1 week long, and it's really magical to see them go from that point to just having the biggest smile on their face and the really greatest story in their hand.
Full of confidence.
Full of confidence. Yeah, those intangibles that we're not necessarily there measuring, but you see it happen. They just blossom. Is really powerful. And it's, you know, that just goes back to, these are skills that they can carry on the rest of their lives. And so
the challenge of writing, and this is, I like to go into prehistory a lot. Humans have been speaking for hundreds of thousands of years. You know, we don't know the total development of language, but that's natural. Everyone learns to speak. You know, little kids, you don't have to teach them how to speak. They just hang around. Writing was invented only like 5,000 years ago. It's unnatural. It's brand new. They made it up. They made up all these definitions. They made up grammar. And once you, you know, so I've been a writer and editor, and you realize that it's put together and you have your chance to kind of twist it the way you want it. I mean, it's not a solid, frozen thing. But what they did also in prehistory, since they didn't sit kids in a classroom, the kids just watched what the parents did and kind of imitated the real stuff, you know, whether it's shooting a bow and arrow or learning how to hunt or cook or whatever. So education for all those hundreds of thousands of years was basically doing real things.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
I always look at it like, at some point, way back then, you know, somebody knew something, and then somebody else wanted to know what they knew, and then that started, like, the education process. It was an apprentice and this master.
Right.
And then at some point, everybody wanted to learn that as well, so you had to go, more and more people would go to this master to learn, and that's how I always, in my mind, envisioned education started, but it was very hands-on approach to something before it was this, like, university-style test-taking style of education. So it's like, how do you go back to that just natural, like you're saying, gift that people have where it's like, let's just go do it and learn by mistake, you know, and maybe even when I make that mistake, I might even create something new that's even better than what we were trying to do. And that's what I get to witness every day.
It's funny, the entrepreneur masters will always say, make more mistakes, the faster, the better. But teachers don't say that.
Right.
Teachers where's my red pen?
Right.
Yeah, so that's true.
Get all that stuff. And we're going to take a break here in a second, but I wanted to say, I was an adjunct for a while at St. Thomas in the journalism department. And one thing that happens when you're in the position of being a teacher, it makes you learn a lot more. For example, I was doing a writing class, and I didn't know. So then you really have to look up the grammar and get good at it if you're going to be a teacher. So,
yeah, and you also learn some things that are, you know, a little bit more fluid, like you were saying, when it comes to grammar specifically. You do. And I think you'll agree that one of the best things about leading an organization like this is that it is constant learning for yourself as well.
Right. I agree with that.
You learn, you make mistakes, and then you make it up. You keep on going. We're here talking with a couple of 360 people. We have David Otero from Youth Lens 360 and Chad Carruthers, the executive director of 360 Journalism, and a devotee to Youth Lens 360, Devante Lowe. We'll be back right after this.
Synapse, think tank of the air. We'll be back in a moment.
And welcome back to Synapse, think tank of the air. I'm Steve LeBeau, and we have our guest today, Dario Otero from YouthLens 360, and his, I was going to say student, but I guess you're still a student.
Accomplished student.
Accomplished?
No, accomplice.
Accomplice. Okay, accomplice and student.
He's accomplished too.
Devante Lowe. And an aspiring entrepreneur. And then Chad Carruthers from 360 Journalism. Who you actually study journalism, so you know what you're doing.
Some days I do, yes. You know, but I'm lucky, fortunate that, you know, we have three full-time staff, including myself. And I'm fortunate that the other two are extremely capable and have experiences that, you know, in some ways overlap mine, but also have unique experiences. that help us elevate what we do in the classroom, but also in what we just offer as a whole to our students. So
what kind of media do you do? I mean,
well, yeah, like I mentioned, we start with writing, and writing is the core, and we produce 360 magazine 2 to 3 times a year, which is full of our students' content from various activities that they've encountered during our programming. And then over the last 2 years, we've started a TV broadcast camp, and
hey,
that is in partnership with Blue Cross Blue Shield Center for Prevention. And we also do a radio camp in partnership with Minnesota Public Radio.
Great.
Yes. And we just finished our summer camp programming, including our TV and radio camps. And if I can do a shameless plug, but it's totally worth it, go to our website.
Tell anybody.
Go to our website, 360.stthomas.edu, click on the TV and radio, and all of our fresh content that our kids created just weeks ago with those radio and TV camps is posted, and it's fantastic. So,
well, I didn't hear you mention Twitter. Don't you have a Twitter camp?
We do. No, we don't have a Twitter camp. We have a Twitter account.
Okay. But, okay.
No, we do. But we do some, you know, we've been talking here both on and off the air about just kind of the changing education landscape. And, you know, one thing we do as a program is writing is our core and probably always will be, just because, if nothing else, because of the transferableness of the
skill. Write, and even if you're an attorney, you can write for your local, you know, publication or an in-house blog or something.
But we're all, and we're also very mindful, though, of making sure that we're staying with the times from a media perspective. And as we all know, nobody knows exactly where media is going, but it is changing rapidly. So we try to keep going.
Hmm. Yeah.
Well, I was going to mention, Devante, you're of the proper generation to, you probably grew up with a media, with
social
a computer.
Media account.
Social, yeah, did you? Or when did you start? Were you in first grade?
Man, I probably had a old Nokia bar cell phone probably when I was like 5. So,
wow.
You know, technology for me started pretty early.
Let me see your thumb muscles. Do you know how to?
You know, this one's a little injured, but this one's pretty strong still. But
injured from overactivity, right?
Yeah, exactly. You know, I don't know. I just, technology has definitely grown and is definitely surpassed where I grew up with it, you know, and I only see it progressing much, much more. I mean, like, my daughter's 2 years old, and she knows how to operate a cell phone, so it's just,
oh my gosh,
it's insane, you know, so.
It's kind of weird. You just hand the phone to them, or they take it, one of the two, and they just start using it, and they know how to use it.
Exactly.
Well, I'll tell you a story. My mom put me in a text chain last night with my aunt, my father, and my son, who is 9. And so he has a cell phone. He just got one for his birthday. If that's wrong or right, I don't know. People will probably criticize me for that. But all of a sudden, I see him respond at like 10:30 at night. And I'm like, what is he doing in the text chain? He's supposed to be asleep. I bust in the room, and sure enough, he's on the phone. And I'm like, go to bed.
That's so it slipped out.
That's an amateur mistake.
Yeah. So do you talk to people in person, Devante? I mean, do you...
Oh, man, that's so old school now. No, I'm just kidding. I feel like, me personally, I'd rather get connected with people in person and build that personal connection. You know, there's nothing like that when you when you create an experience with somebody in actual, like, reality instead of over social media. I think too many things get misconstrued, and there's too many concepts people have on certain things and views, and, like, it just gets messed up along the way. So I prefer personal connections.
Well, a big part of communication is miscommunication.
Exactly. Yeah.
So I don't know how many times I've been in some sort of email back and forth with people, and then I just pick up the phone and say, hey, can we talk? We can clear this up in about 30 seconds if I get to ask a question or two without waiting for an email.
Absolutely. Yeah.
One of the things that we've been able to do at Youth Lens 360 is create positive media. So a lot of the communities that are challenged and going through challenges have a lot of negative media coming out of them. And
that's part of the mainstream pride.
Right. And a lot of the focus on those communities and the lens that's on that community constantly makes it seem as though that's all that happens in certain communities. Right. And so we actually pitched to the city of Minneapolis ideas around creating positive music videos and positive content. And so that's something that we're working on now, is like, how do we create more images that can be shared on social media, shared to the younger generation, right? Like the 6th, 7th, 8th graders that have so much negative stuff coming at them daily on their social media. They're all going home from school with their tablets
and they're not doing homework. So it's like if the school's giving you this media device and we think that they're just going home and they're just learning, they are learning, but they're learning a lot of stuff from the news sources, from even just negative media that's coming to them constantly. How can we jump in there with some positive stuff that can be shared as well?
Right, because the consumption, I read recently that they predict that 87% of media consumption will be audio and video. Mm. So, yeah. Sorry, books.
Hey, yeah, and sorry, newspapers, right? But, I'm surprised it's not already up there already, to be honest with you. It's, you know, we get print newspapers in front of our kids all the time, and very, very few of them have ever experienced that before. So
it's crazy.
It's when I read, the difference between a newspaper and reading online is that you see a lot of stuff you don't see online, because they'll put something in front of you based on some algorithm that thinks, oh, this is what Steve wants to look at. So we'll just push it up in front of his face and not let him browse through all these things that who knows, I might be interested in but never thought of before.
Yeah. Exactly.
They only big data only knows the things that you thought of
before. Yeah, and I think, you know, I read newspapers extensively all my life, really. But, you know, I would say that a great deal of what I have learned is through reading print and newspapers. Mm-hmm. And a lot of it's for the reason you say. I had my, you know, areas of interest that I would always go to. But then, of course, as you're flipping the pages, you're walking over some other things that maybe you didn't know you had an interest in, but the headline catches your eye and you read it and you learn something about your community or whatever else that you may not have online. It may not have crossed your eyes and you never would have gone there.
Right. In fact, one of my nerd activities as not even as a child, but as an adult, is to go to the library. And the downtown Minneapolis library used to have all these new book bins. Mm-hmm. And so I'd go around and look at all the new books, whatever category it was. You know, I wasn't big on fiction, but all the different nonfiction types of things. And I would maybe check out six and kind of pour through them, not read them cover to cover, but you'd find out a lot of interesting things, but I never would have known them otherwise. Of course, now I have all the books, book files, books on PDF. Right. My computer, so I don't go to the library anymore.
Yeah, it's too bad.
I don't think I'll ever get tired of books. I love reading. Ever since like the fifth grade, I've read at a college level, so it's like been it's been a good thing for me.
What kind of books?
I like all types of books. I'd say more mystery, you know, fiction kind of stuff. But I love reading books that teach me new things as well. Mm-hmm. Like I'm sure this is such a cliche book. Everybody has this book, The Art of War. I have that at home, sure. So I picked that up.
Sun Tzu or?
Yep. Something like that. I'm not going to try to.
I thought I'd be brave.
It's a hard book to read, definitely, though. It has some $50 words in there like we were talking about, but yeah.
Well, you need a $100 dictionary. You get through that stuff.
Google.
Yeah.
Or Google. Yeah.
Google it. The thing I don't like about fiction, And this is, you know, the whole idea, I think, of Journalism 360, telling stories, or 360 Journalism, telling stories. And I think, you know, my theory is that the idea of a story is based on the structure of action, you know, mm-hmm. beginning, middle, and end. A does B. Mm. And so that's imprinted in our DNA, because if we don't act, we don't survive.
Right.
And so the stories are like that. And the trouble is, when the story's in a book, it takes like, 6-8 hours? Who knows how long to read it? And I'm up all night reading because I got to find out what happens.
Right, what happens next.
Even a bad movie, what happens? I got to see what happens.
You can't stand the cliffhanger.
No. No. So, anyone here want to write a novel?
I do.
You do?
Yep. I was actually starting a novel. It was called Justice's Journey. It was kind of like, I would say kind of like a biography, but not in the sense of telling the story of myself. It was through another character type thing. So I don't know what you would convey that as, but yeah. So, but basically the novel is going to be about a young kid born into this certain lifestyle and then just kind of figuring it out from there, you know, has some ups and downs. I won't give you guys too much information, just, you know.
How does your life turn out?
We'll see. Okay. I haven't, you know, my
you
book,
written the end
my
yet.
Story's been still being written, so we'll find out.
Well, it's good that you're in control of your own story.
Definitely. I believe everybody is in control of their own story, and, you know, we all have that blank page on the other side, but what we do today determines what gets written on that page. So
it's kind of fun and scary at the same time.
Yeah, definitely.
I mean, it's natural to wake up and just do the same thing over. Okay, just reprint that page yesterday. Yeah. I'll do that again.
Worked out pretty good.
Maybe
then,
change what's for dinner.
I don't know. I get tired of stagnant, so I got to switch it up all the time.
Well, how old are you?
I'm only 23 years old.
23. Okay. Yeah. What's about my daughter? She's turning 24 in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, I'll be 24 in November.
So where did you go to school?
I went to school, high school. I went to school Patrick Henry for 2 years, and then I moved out to Arizona. And then I went to school out there. I went to a school called Shadow Mountain, and then I didn't do too good. So I went to an alternative school. And then I'd say maybe like a year and a half, 2 years later, I ended up moving back here. And so where I'm at now is I'm currently studying for my GED. I have one more test, my math test. I take that on the 23rd, and then I'll be going to MCTC.
Whoa, good to get a plan.
Yep, cool. Definitely.
So you like to read, but now the math.
Man.
The math comes out.
Math is the worst subject. So that's why I saved it for last. That's the one that needs the most work.
That's why I teach journalism.
Yeah, I think I was taking my first year math class on my third year of college, just trying, you know, for the third time. So
I took no math in college.
Yeah.
I had enough in high school, but I never liked it. And I was a bad influence on my daughter. She didn't wasn't big on math either. But she went to a school where they didn't care, so
Yeah.
Anyway, gosh, we all come and so look, we're counter the stereotype. It's supposed to be men are strong at math. It's women that are within it, and every woman I know knows how to
exactly
calculate.
Yeah.
Oh yeah,
quicker
very,
than me.
Very calculate. Oh wait, that's not what you meant. But I agree.
I'm not saying anything. Am I getting in trouble with this one?
No, I'm not editing that out either.
Right. Is this thing on? Wait a minute.
The one thing I like, I was mentioning in my previous job, I worked with a lot of young entrepreneurs, and it's so much fun to deal with people that are not of my age. Not that all older people are boring, but just most of them are.
Yeah. The new creative ideas that they come with, just, you know, it's amazing to me. Just even when we're doing business, right? So if we're sitting down with a client and, you know, I have somebody like Devontae with me and he understands social media to a certain level that a lot of other companies don't. He could give you ideas around the content that we're going to create for this company so that it can, you know, show on social media the right way. Like that little bit of knowledge that he just has in him is amazing when you're sitting down with a client. You know, it's something that the clients pay a lot of money to understand. So.
Well, that's in your card, the youth perspective, right?
Exactly. Looking at
I'm a big believer in that because every perspective is incomplete.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a lot of, let's get an adult expert on youth and ask.
Right.
See what he has to say about what they're thinking.
Yeah. Exactly.
And ignore you.
Well, I'm with you, though. It's not that adults are boring, but you get a lot of great energy and thoughts and ideas and everything else from young people. And definitely one of the favorite parts of my job is just being able to work with high school students. And, you know, we're in the college setting as well. So getting to work with those kids as well, some too. Really, it gives you know, first of all, people, you always hear negative things about millennials, and I don't see it at all with, you're a millennial.
Yeah, I know.
No offense.
It's all right. But you know, what I see is completely different from what the popular culture would have you believe. And the younger ones too, which, what are they, Gen Z, I think? Yeah, I think so.
So do you make fun of the Gen Z?
I do. I'm guilty, but I don't want to make fun of them. I want to just teach them to do better, you know?
Now, how would you characterize them? I mean, I agree that the millennial stereotype is wrong, because working with young entrepreneurs, they're high achievers, they're diligent, they're out to do things. The one thing they have in common, and maybe you can tell me if you agree with this, they all want their businesses to have a strong social element.
Right.
And they think that it shouldn't be up to government to fix everything wrong in society. It should be up to them. So it's like business, a responsible business is the way to fix society rather than some government program. So
I believe that if you have a business and it's in the community, they definitely should have some serious involvement in impacting that community in positive ways, you know. I don't believe that, you know, like, for instance, say you have a restaurant on 38th in Chicago and, you know, there's something going on around the neighborhood, maybe go approach that yourself instead of calling your local police department or whatever. Not if it's going to put your life in danger or anything like that, but I'm just saying certain situations, you know, might be able to be handled through the community with the business partner or something like that.
I agree with that. One of the reasons why I really wanted to do Youth Lens 360 was the fact that I didn't see, you know, that entrepreneurial spirit in certain communities being, how can I say, tapped, right? Like, it's there. People understand entrepreneurship, you know, whether it's the hot dog stand or the lemonade stand on that, you know, but nobody's saying when they go to school that you have this intelligent mind and how could you start something that you know, in your community that you want to grow. And if you could start something in your community that you want to grow and make it self-sustainable, then, like, what could you do to change the community for what you want it to be? You know, and that I saw probably generations ago, like with my great grandfather, I heard about these stories. But for some reason, at some point, you know, there was a change in that in certain communities, and people were split apart and communities were, you know, split apart. And we see that effect today where it's like it's still there in spirit. Right. Like, but it's not being, nobody's cultivating that, you know, entrepreneurial spirit of these young people. And that's really what I wanted to do with Youth Lens 360.
Well, plus so much education, when it is career focused, it's on where are you going to get a job.
Mm-hmm.
And then I've talked to a lot of young entrepreneurs that graduated in 2008, and they said there were no jobs. We had to become entrepreneurs. There was no choice. And now there's a huge, huge percentage of the population, I'm not exactly sure, and they're basically freelancers, you know, mm-hmm. the self-employed economy.
Yeah, and I think that's interesting. And, you know, I think, you know, a lot of research and just history shows that having a healthy entrepreneurial community and small business community is really important. And the social responsibility aspect definitely is more visible than it's ever been.
So you cover important issues for your students. They don't just cover... Yes, movies or you
we
know.
Do, yeah. And that kind of goes to the empowerment piece that you were referring to, you know, asking our students what in their community or their lives matters and what story do they want to tell. And, you know, we somehow mold that all generally under some sort of theme. But and I'll give you the example of our TV broadcast camp. All of those stories were around health equity and different, generally different health equity gaps.
Or the lack thereof.
Yeah, and some interesting initiatives to try to balance that out a little bit. So great. Yeah, we're very much in tune with making sure our kids are have a voice in what matters to them.
Great. Well, you're tuned in to Synapse Think Tank of the Air. We'll be back right after this.
Synapse. Think Tank of the Air. We'll be back in a moment.
We're back. I'm Steve LeBeau with Synapse, Think Tank of the Air. We're talking about, actually different modes of education, how to get these kids into something new besides the standard curriculum. Which I don't think it's working at all. I mean, it seems to work when kids graduate, but then what do they do, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And then in the Twin Cities, they're even having trouble having kids graduate.
Mm-hmm.
So especially along the racial lines, you know, it's I think Minnesota is the worst in the nation for high school graduations, the achievement gap. So definitely we need to change somehow. I know I talked to one woman who said that they're looking for more practical ways to teach kids. And they pointed to the New Country Schoolhouse. Have you been to that down in southern Minnesota? I forget which town. But it's basically kids enroll there and they just take projects. They have projects to work on instead of, you know, okay, you're going to take math at 10 and, you know, English at 11. And then they learn whatever they need to learn. Okay, you have to write your business proposal. Well, there you need a little English, you need a little writing. You know, you got to do your budget. Well, then there's the math come in. Oh, I'm going to make something out of wood. Well, then you've got to measure that and you know, twice measured, only once cut, that kind of talk.
Would you say New Country? It took me a second, but that's in Henderson, Minnesota, I believe.
Henderson, that's right.
I got trained there when I first came into education about project-based learning.
Right, so that's the place.
Yep, and Doug Thomas, I believe, was the director at the time, and Doug's just a great guy.
School was amazing. We got to see like how project-based learning should happen, right? And I took a lot of my training back to the High School for Recording Arts. And that's when I actually, it was a project at the time to create the visual inclusion program that turned into what is still there now, which is youth in the special education field feeling like they have power when it comes to creating the media content at the school. So you have a really cool school with music studios in there. Well, the next step is everybody wants their photo shoot, their, you know, they want their video shot to the music that they created. And that's happening at the High School for Recording Arts. And that was my experience, you know, going through that project-based learning process that I learned.
So you're talking about the excitement. We were talking earlier about confidence. I mean, what you have is engaged students. And that's the challenge in the regular classroom is that it's so boring. How do you get them engaged? I mean,
that was my issue. Like, nothing was captivating enough to me. Nothing really stuck with me. It was all just cut and dry, just
blah, blah, blah.
Like Charlie Brown's teacher, you know, like,
We all know what that sounds like.
I mean, for me, I wish that, you know, when I went to high school, they would have taught me how to balance a checkbook or change a tire or, you know, real life important. Not saying that math and English and all of these subjects aren't important, but more like realistic, everyday things that you encounter.
Yeah, practical application.
Exactly.
I mean, yeah, we all need to be taught how to add and so forth and so on, but what does that mean, you know? And when you talk about project-based learning, going into a wood shop or whatever and then measuring twice and cutting once, you know, that all feeds into each other. But, you know, we've gotten to a point, at least when I was in school, where it was pretty much just sitting at the desk and listening to Charlie Brown's teacher, whoever it may have been.
Well, and then in math, they had like sets and the new math. I don't know what you guys had.
Yeah.
All these negative numbers and unreal numbers. I mean,
yes.
I've never dealt with those things in my life.
Yeah, actually, I was back in St. Louis over the weekend, and one of my friends brought up the unreal number, and I was like, what? So, yeah. Well, that's why I teach journalism again.
If you want a challenge, go sit down with a third or fourth grader right now and try to learn math, because they're learning it completely different now.
Yeah,
so,
it's very different.
Is it applied, or is it just...
I don't know what it is, but my son knows it, so it's working, but I'm still like, I'm lost.
See,
I can't help him at all.
Daddy, help me with my math.
And it's like I've been out of school for so long, I don't remember.
Yeah, sorry, kid.
Yeah, the way they're doing it now is definitely different. Mm-hmm. And I don't know why it has to change, but it changed for some reason, and they're doing it completely different. But it's like we said, you got to relearn that just to be able to teach it. And I think that's what teachers have to do. It's like, go out and learn something so that you can get into the minds of these young people and work with them, not teach them, but like facilitate a classroom of conversations, of questions, and let those students be able to tell you what they know. And then and that learning process, the exchange of education is what needs to happen versus like, I'm the only person that knows about English right now in this classroom. I'm going to teach you this. And so if I would have went to a program like 360 Journalism, who knows where I would have been, but I grew up in high school thinking I was a bad reader, bad writer, and I had a second chance and a blessing to go to college. It was really not supposed to happen, but when it happened, I had to relearn everything at the writer's lab. But I got to sit with people my age that were telling me, like, this is how you do this. This is how you do this. So I understood it. And I didn't learn how to write really and read really till college. That was a big challenge for me. I graduated out of high school with a 1.6 GPA. So it was like, but the only difference was I was going into this writer's lab with young people working with me, you know, that kind of dove into like, well, what is your interest? What do you want to write about? I had never been asked that in high school.
So you had your curiosity sparked.
Definitely. Yeah.
Cool.
And
story.
That's the key part of journalism. I mean, I went through a period in school, I think a sixth grade, where we had to think of questions about chapters, and I had the toughest time. And then I became an interviewer when I grew up, and I think questions left and right.
Yeah.
So it's, but it seems so abstract just to, at the end of a chapter, write a question.
Yeah.
It's not like a real person.
It starts to develop that process of inquiry, I guess, you know?
Right. Yeah. So, and then of course, in my days, in the 60s, when I went to high school, they said, question authority. Mm. So the first authorities we questioned were the teachers.
Right. Of course, right.
What are you doing?
Yeah.
So anyway, of course, maybe that's why I kind of identify sometimes with millennials, because they're kind of rebels too in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
Kind of the, well, you tell me, Devonta, you grew up when 9/11 was happening, right?
Wow. Yeah, yeah.
So that set your framework for, okay, welcome to reality.
Oh, man. I don't know. Me personally, I've always had problems with authority. That just goes from how I was raised. I was raised in like a single parent home, you know, your typical dad wasn't around, stuff like that. So, you know, I didn't really have that authoritative piece in my life. So when I went to school and there were teachers that were more by the book, you know, I rebelled. So, but I feel like as a millennial, I hate saying that, but as one of those,
as a so-called millennial,
right? As a so-called millennial, I feel like none of us like to be told what to do. You know, I feel like maybe I know that I learn better, or I respect someone more from an older perspective, like someone Dario's age or your age, whatever. I respect them more as if like, you tell me not to do something, but then you educate me why. Not just because this is how it is and this is what I say. I feel like as a, you know, so-called millennial, I think most of us would respect that more, you know, because I feel like a lot of us don't have a lot of respect for people older than us. You know, that's the misconstrued misconception on us. Like, we don't have respect for people older than us, but...
You're just picky.
Yeah, just picky. Not all of us, but most of us.
But the point is that some old people... do have wisdom to share.
They definitely
their life's
do.
Experience. Yeah. If you sit down and talk to them, most of them don't speak up. You got to go to them. And
you want to know what it is, honestly? It's with us, it's, you know, you guys have lived so much life that you guys demand respect, you know, and it's like, you know, give us respect as well, you know, like don't just think that we're below you and beneath you just because of our age and we don't know nothing. I don't know. I'm just speaking from a perspective.
Well, you know, we have at 360, we have, like I mentioned earlier, some great volunteers who really support our programming. And a lot of that is one-on-one with our students. And our students, I think, you know, the last program year, 97% of our students are students of color. Many of them are recent immigrants. They're from all over the world. Last summer, 2017, we had students out of about 100 students. We had kids from 19 different countries. So it's a really diverse, you know, group of kids. And we have these volunteers come into them. And we have several longtime and even retired journalists who are part of that volunteer pool. So the point is you have older white men sitting down with these young kids from all over the world who have completely different backgrounds. But over the time period, over the week and sometimes 2 weeks that they work together, you know, first of all, the adults gain a lot out of that experience and they know they will do that. And that's part of why they do it. But the kids, they have no idea what to think. You know, you're sitting me down with this person. What in the, how is this going to work?
Right.
But they get exactly what you're saying, the wisdom and so forth as they go through that process. And not only from the technical training that the individual can offer the student, but just from a life skills and life story and just advice. It's really cool. It's just
definitely
one of those add-ons that you don't expect necessarily to go going into the room, but then you come out and you're like, wow, that's pretty neat.
I would presume some of those students like spent years in a refugee camp.
Yeah, exactly.
Saw a lot more reality than
definitely.
You should by their young
yes.
age.
Yeah, it's unbelievable, some of the stories. And I'll plug our website again. Go on and look at the college essays and you'll read a lot about them.
You know what's interesting is if you ever walk into a school and you talk to a youth that's in a school setting and you ask them what their favorite subject is, they'll always tell you their favorite teacher. Mm. They'll never say like, oh, my favorite subject is this. They'll start to tell you about the teacher, the teacher's background, who they are and why they like them. You know, he sits down with me or she sits down with me and has a conversation and it's not just all about the subject, you know. And so like when you hear that over and over and over, you start to realize that it is really about relationship building. Mm-hmm. And if a teacher were to walk in the school year this year and start out with having that just conversation around like, this is who I am and what I did this summer and what did you guys do, and start to build a relationship before diving into a subject, they'll end up making really good math students if that's the subject that they're teaching, just because of that relationship piece, right? That's so important.
They say that about careers too. They say you don't quit a job, you quit a boss. Mm. So it's that lack of relationship or that bad relationship that drives you out of there.
I'll quit a few of those then.
You quit a couple of bosses.
Yeah, you know that. You've learned of things already. You're only 23 and you've been through that.
I don't know. I've always, been drawn or connected to people older than me. You know, I don't really connect with people my age or younger. I do, but I don't. I prefer to be around people older than me with more wisdom. That's just how I've always been. Mm. I feel like life experiences bring wisdom, you know.
You're not just kissing up to us.
No, I'm
no, I'm kidding.
I'm being honest. Everything I say is true. So
everything is
never everything.
Lied. Yes. Never lied before.
Never.
That's good. Well, that's the kind of person you want to work with. Now, we haven't talked about where do you find your kids?
Yeah.
For both of you. I mean, where do you dig up young would be journalists or would be entrepreneurs? Do you want to do your commercials now?
Go right ahead, Dario.
For Youth Lens 360, it's really interesting. I started out just knowing a core group of youth that I really had been working with, both in and out of school. So I found them, you know, trying to figure out still how to navigate the world, even though they had graduated high school. You know, what maybe they went to college for a year, but didn't really know if they wanted to do that because they were out in some, you know, country, you know, like really country college where they didn't feel like they had, you know, anybody that looked like them there. And so they would come back and then go back to the city schools like the MCTCs and stuff like that, but still weren't finding what they wanted to do. And I know them as, you know, very intelligent young people that were into entrepreneurship when they were in high school. And so just grabbing them back into entrepreneurship and what I was doing.
So what kind of age range are you talking about?
Yeah, so 14 to 24 is what Youth Lens 360 work with. We work with a lot more of the high school age students in the school, or we'll create opportunities for them to come outside of the school building and do projects. But a lot of the youth that I work with are in that 18 to 24 range. Mm. We're going to business meetings. We're going to sit down with clients and figure out how to market their product and sit down and, you know.
Devonta, did you learn how to put on a tie?
I learned that when I started going to church. But I don't know anymore.
Things here and there.
Yeah. I forgot.
Oh, you forgot?
Yeah. Okay. Been a while.
That's very much part of it, though. It's like, you know, when do you pull out that, you know, that dress outfit? When can you go casually, you know? Right. I mean, when you look up and you see, like, all the tech gurus, they're all just wearing T-shirts, right? Like, so could you just walk in with your T-shirt? I know nothing against you, Chad. But
And I'm far from a tech guru. Clear that up.
But, you know, it's like this, you know, they see this, you know, oh, I want to be like Mark Zuckerberg. I want to be the next tech guy. Sure. But he just wears a T-shirt everywhere, so I guess I can do that. Well, try to do that when you walk in with your next client. Right. Like, so it's that, you know, you got to be able to work through that with youth. And so much of the work that we do is just really just mentorship. Not only am I being mentored as a entrepreneur, but I'm passing on whatever I'm being mentored in to them. And then that's why somebody like Devonta wants to go work with youth, because he's going to pass it on to other young people. So that's four generations.
So how do they sign up?
Yeah, they sign up through just coming in the door. I'm at the Impact Hub.
They sign up with their feet.
Yeah, they sign up with their feet. So I'm at the Impact Hub downtown here in Minneapolis, the brand new Finnegan's and Impact Finnovation
space. That's where your office is?
Yes, our office is in there. And so, like, when you walk in there, you cannot walk into the Finnovation space without seeing our office. Mm. And that's done by design. We want to be there in a position where we're showing that, you know, a lot of these young people that are coming in there can work in this entrepreneur space, but also for the young people to think about, like, how can my company also have social impact? And so that's why that space is so important for our youth, to be able to walk in there, you know, walk over to Software for Good, for example, and talk to them about, you know, the next app that they want to design. Well, you have Software for Good down the hall, you know, and all these app designers running around. And it's really an interesting opportunity for a lot of young people that may not have ever seen themselves going into technology. Now that gate is open, that door is open, just because of the people that are in that space.
So there's a sense of collaboration, a sense of camaraderie, but you can learn a lot casually more than you can learn sometimes in a formal situation.
Yeah, and you're also talking about that access piece. And when you get into, you know, gaps of various types, and underrepresented populations and so forth, a lot of it, part of it at least, is just access and showing people what somebody else did and that they're capable of the same thing. And this is how that might look or how that might work is huge.
How do you recruit young journalists?
Well, I'm glad you asked. And I just want to clarify, too, I always dress for radio, so that's why. We get our kids from many different areas. They come from across the metro, the Twin Cities. We have a couple strong relationships with Harding High School on the east side of St. Paul, Cristo Rey over here in Minneapolis. Our engagement manager at 360, Bao Vang, is a Harding High School graduate. So she has the uncanny ability to walk into a classroom and tell students, many of whom are Hmong like herself, that you need to be in this program. And they say, okay. and they come. So
it's easy.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's just one slice of the pie right there. But you know, and a lot of it is word of mouth too. And when I say that, we have tight relationships with a lot of school administrators and teachers. You know, we're a very intensive programming, and we need our kids to be engaged in the classroom. So we need kids who want to be there and want to get as much as they can out of the program. And it works. And we teachers know that, administrators know that, and they are really helpful in identifying kids who would thrive in our program. And part of it, too, is just pure word of mouth, too. Hey, I was in this great program over the summer, 360 Journalism. You might want to try it. Or they'll see our kids work on our website or on social media or whatever, and they say, hey, this is something I want to be a part of.
So. Now, did they used to have work in the Star Tribune?
Just say that again, I'm sorry.
Did they used to have their work printed in the...
Yeah, they still do. I'm glad you mentioned that, actually. The Saturday of Labor Day weekend, which I believe this year is the 2nd, September 2nd, some of our kids' work from this summer will be published in spreads in both the Star Tribune and Pioneer Press.
Really? So, both sides of the river?
Both sides of the river, yes, indeed.
Well, that's good.
Mm-hmm.
Boy, this is getting excited. I want to go back to school. I want to study these things.
I want
Dario to be my mentor.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. It's pretty cool that, you know, we have guys like you that are working and paying it forward. And I mean, that's really what it's all about. And I mentioned at the beginning of this, you know, when I came here, that what I saw on the street looked a lot different from where I came from. But one thing that is also very different here is the collective energy and collaboration and real keen desire to do good in this community. And yes, we have some really unfortunate and miserable gaps that need to be addressed and are being addressed. And hopefully we'll see those needles move even faster. But at the same time, there are a lot of people here who really want to help make that happen. And I think that says a lot about the Twin Cities in Minnesota.
Well, yeah. We got a lot of work cut out for us.
Yeah, absolutely.
To get out there and start entrepreneuring.
Exactly. I agree so much with what Chad just said, because it's like every time I step outside the door and I do something like this radio show, I meet people that are doing the work. And I'm like, there's this misconception that nobody's trying out here. And I think that that's what I see from my young people, that when you look at the gap, when you look at 11,000 truant students around the metro, what you're seeing is that untapped potential. And I think our programs are just saying like, hey, how can we tap into that potential that people are looking over and bring them into a space like a Youth Lens 360, 360 Journalism, or wherever, where these kids could be able to, you know, excel.
Okay, we've run out of time, and we've come to a 360 on the clock.
Yeah, when do we get to do part two?
Part two is coming up later. So I'd like to thank Chad Carruthers from 360 Journalism and Dario Otero from Youth Lens 360. And Devante Lowe, you get the last word. What's your next project going to be?
My next project, getting my business off the ground.
And do you have a name yet?
I did have a name. Hold on one second. Let me think. You caught me off guard. It was Youth in...
I can't remember. I remember we came. We were still in that design stage.
So I have it. I have it.
Okay.
Youth in Development.
All right. There you go. Youth and Development.
Yeah.
YID.
I gotta check and make sure it's not taken already.
Yeah.
But.
Okay. So we'll put an asterisk on that.
Yeah.
Thanks for joining us. And you've been listening to Synapse Think Tank of the Air. And a special thanks to Dan Cook, our producer. And this is a production with WCCO Radio, our media partner.
Thank you for listening to Synapse Think Tank of the Air. I'm Leo Espinosa.